Hello and welcome to another episode of Building Minnesota Rocker. I'm Ashley, aka Midnight, joined by Brett Diamond, the COO here at Rocker and Version One. We've got Anthony, aka Nameless, on with us today, a Call of Duty legend in his own right, CDL host, analyst, former professional player. Did you coach at one point, or am I tripping?
No, I haven't coached yet. I've been offered to coach a few times, and I just haven't taken the plunge. So I just love what I do, right? I wouldn't want to switch. I like being on camera. So,
yeah, I think you're tremendous on camera, and you do have that player background, and I think you could coach. So you have that unique kind of perspective that you're able to bring to the broadcast and really kind of like help viewers understand like what the heck is going on. So I'm super stoked to have you on here today. I know you've been doing a lot of streaming lately too, which is really awesome to see. Is that something you plan to keep up when Call of Duty League starts again in 2021, or are you kind of just off-season grinding?
So there's like this unique opportunity in a stressful situation where it's like we have a pandemic, right? But we're at home all the time. And what do you do from home? I mean, you stream if you're a gamer, and I've been doing it for a long time. I've been streaming, I think I made my Twitch account back when it was Justin TV way back in the day. I've streamed on like nearly every platform. And so it's something I love to do. And with being at home so much, I've been able to balance it because usually I'm traveling like crazy, especially with the launch of the CDL. I was supposed to be gone like every other weekend. So it would have been a huge challenge. So I've just sort of tried to take advantage of this opportunity. And since Cold War came out, like I've been live, you know, 8 hours a day, every single day. And I love every second of it. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, what do you think of the game so far? Like, first impressions. I want to hear what you think, and then I want to hear it from Brett's angle, too, because he's getting up there. He's about to be a vet.
Yeah. So, first impression. Competitively, I think that this game, obviously with some tweaks, would be absolutely fantastic. But just, like, sort of that out-of-the-box fun when you hop on a game, are you having fun? Like, that's the number one question, I think, for any game that wants to be a major esport. Like, people have to play it. People have to enjoy it. And with this game, I just think it has a huge advantage over the last few titles. Like right out of the box, when you hop into a public match, you're immediately having fun. Now, once that SBMM builds up a little bit, you might not be having as much fun. But in terms of the mechanics and the way the guns shoot and how satisfying it is to get a kill, even like just getting a headshot, it just feels so good. And for me, I'm having a blast. So, yes, I haven't had fun playing pubs and wagers like this in 4 years or so.
You want the noob perspective from me, Ashley? Is that up next?
Yeah.
Let me hear it.
Well, Ashley knows because I text her occasional screenshots of my performance. Like, whatever that magical, mystical, skill-based matchmaking algorithm is, I'm like right at like between noob and whatever is right above noob because yeah. I'll go in like 10 minutes. I went, I think I had like, I was like 39 and 27, and I was really pumped. And I texted Ashley a picture, and then literally two games later, I was like 10 and 30. So clearly they leveled me up, and I just got crushed by like probably people who aren't even that good. But yeah, I'm having a lot of fun playing it though. It's I'm not quite ready to say it's my year, but it's fun.
It's my year. It's Nameless's year. It's Rocker's year. Hopefully we would love to talk kind of just the broader kind of roster picture and just everything we've kind of seen happen in the off season. Feels like everything happened so fast. Feels like just yesterday the season ended, champs happened, and just all the craziness happened. New game comes out. It's all moving really fast. But I think for me, my first Cold War impressions, I'm going to say it. I just know when I play a new COD, like if I'm going to like it or not, and if it's going to like do well. Now obviously there's a ton of adjustments that happens to Call of Duty. They're just not out of the box going to have the perfect like update patches, all that stuff, but this is going to be the best Call of Duty in the last 5 years. This reminds me of Black Ops 3, Black Ops 2, like those vibes immediately. Like I knew, especially Black Ops 2, when I first played, I was like, oh my god, this is the game. And it ended up being the game. And then same thing with Black Ops 3, I was like, man, this is incredible. So I think the same for Black Ops Cold War. I think it's going to be a great year. Like, yeah, I guess if I had to find a complaint, obviously the skill-based matchmaking. Listen, I'm sorry, I have 600 score per minute, and I just every free-for-all I play feels like I'm playing on like a GB ladder free-for-all, like sweat, just nuts. Like, they got their scuff controllers bouncing all around, drop-shotting, doing crazy stuff. It's wild. And like, it's, I don't really mind it that much. I get a little frustrated. I do mind, though, that I try to play with my friends, and some of them aren't, like, at that, like, 600 score per minute type vibe, like Brett. And I just, it's unenjoyable for them. So, I don't know. I think there's definitely some tweaking that could happen there, and I have a bunch of opinions. But other than that, I think, like, there's no maps that blow my hair back, really, where I'm like, this is an amazing map. Like, I remember the first time I played Standoff, I was like, this is an amazing map. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know those maps when you first play them. There's none of those in there, but I don't think there are any that are, like, tragically bad. What is your kind of, like, one super positive, one super negative, Nameless, about Cold War?
My super positive, to be honest, would just be the gun mechanics and the movement. You really, like, you can't be super elusive with your movement. Like, it's a strategy based, and, like, positioning is everything, right? My one negative, I have a few. I don't have just one positive or one negative, but if I had to pick one, like I said, the movement is a positive. But the negative that stands out to me is probably the way the perk system and wildcards and everything works right now. I think there needs to be some tweaking to that, because as it stands at the moment, everybody just uses a trophy. You get a million trophies on the map if you're running Gearhead, because there's not really another suitable perk number two that you can run. So we're having to do certain things like gentlemen's agreements and getting rid of, you know, perk greed and things like that, and get rid of Gearhead and stuff. And I like to avoid having gentlemen's agreements, because obviously we want the pub game to be as close to competitive as possible. So I think with some working around, like moving, you know, Gearhead to another spot in your perk list, and adding another perk to perk two to make it competitive with that one, we could make it work. But yeah, that'd probably be my one negative, is right now everybody uses the same thing.
Yeah, and it's weird too, because those field upgrades that Gearhead, you know, impacts and helps you get them faster, they don't really, like, expire. Like, I had, like, 8 proximity mines one time.
Yeah, they got to tune it down.
But yeah, you shouldn't be able to have, like, if you've already thrown one, you shouldn't be able to throw another one. It should replace it, essentially, I think. But even then, I don't even know if that's the fix. I do think, I don't know, man, like, looking at the competitive landscape, uh-huh. We saw CDL this last year going from 5v5 to now 4v4 going into 2021 season. That cuts a lot of pro, like, starting caliber professional level players are not going to be on a starting lineup this year. So just kind of like, what's your forecast for what we're going to see in 2021? Obviously want, like, a specific, like, take on the Rocker roster. We did a whole squad wipe, if you will.
Yeah,
we got a lot of new faces, and we're excited. But it's would be nice to hear. Not well, I mean, you're here, but you can say, like, your truthful, like, thoughts, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I already made a video on it. I'll talk about it again. Love it.
Okay, let's go.
So Rocker, I think you guys had one of the best changes during the offseason. And now after, and I'm not just saying that, I said it in my video before I even spoke to you guys. Another thing about this roster is that now that I have played the game, right, and I'm on it, and I'm grinding it, I know that they're going to be a solid squad. The way this game plays out, right? Like, you don't have to be a maniac. You don't have to be, you know, absolutely turn out of your mind, slide canceling, challenging everything. And the way your team is built is it's going to work very well for this game. I mean, you have accuracy, you have attach. Like, those guys are nasty at these types of games. Like, Search and Destroy right now, everybody's grinding it. It's going to be a strategy-based Search and Destroy game. Smokes are going to be huge. I just think that this roster is built well. I think you guys nailed it. You know, you got a little bit lucky with the way that the game is. But obviously that's built into everything. But yeah, I like this team. I was watching them play earlier. I think it was yesterday. They were in a match versus FaZe where they were playing well on Crossroads Hardpoint. But yeah, they're going to take it super serious. So you guys nailed it with that team.
Go ahead, Brett. I see you're reaching for the bites.
Just getting ready. No, it's good to hear. And, you know, that's really my, you know, my biggest question, whether it's for you or our coaches or really anybody that we talk to at this point is, you know, what's the reaction to how the game impacts our roster, right? Because that's not something, like, I'll freely admit, that's not something that I can tell by, you know, I'm not going to personally figure that out by playing. I'll, you know, I'm having a lot of fun playing, but I'm not, you know, No competitive takeaways from my new matches, but that's really good to hear that's your take after getting in there a little bit. I mean, we're pumped. I mean, the season just can't come soon enough for us and probably most teams at this point, right? It's, you know, the game's out, we're playing more, we're watching watching the player streams, and just, you know, I wish the season started tomorrow. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about your guys' roster is, like, they're not like they're not going to be even a middle of the pack team. Like, they're going to be good. Like, you have four players who are all very, very good at their role. But on top of that, what you guys have is, and it's an edge over a lot of the other rosters, is that you have composure, right? Like, these guys, if they're losing, like, they're not going to hate each other. Like, they're going to be good friends. You have Major Maniac, who's like Major Maniac and Priesta, two of the chillest players ever of all time. Like, I don't think I've ever heard either one of them raise their voice to their teammate ever. You have Accuracy, who can be animated at times, but in a positive way. Like, anybody who has teamed with Accuracy and is no longer teaming with him, they always have good things to say about him because of the way that he approaches practice. Like, you're on time, you have to be on point, and he's also very receptive to what coaches say to him. So he's going to work well with the coaching staff. And then you have Attach, who obviously grinds content. He's an absolute beast of the game as well. So, like, it's like the perfect storm that you guys got going on, and I hope it works out for you.
I'm hopeful too. I'm just really excited about this group. I think one of the things when we look at, like, who do we want to really represent, like, our organization, obviously we want to win. Like, that's, you know, you want to get the best possible players, but a lot of it's the intangibles, right? That you don't see on the Lion Man scorecards, if you will. The, you know, how do they take a loss? How do they adjust afterwards? What's their work ethic like? What are they actually going to focus on? You know, are you going to lose them halfway through the season if it doesn't start well? Like, it's all about having that grit and that composure to bounce back if stuff's rough, or to just, you know, keep the momentum going. We're really excited because the guys, you know, typically we try to have our team up in Minnesota so we can do great content. Obviously, Brett's in the facility there. It's a little lonely. Brett's all by himself.
This is my personal broadcast studio. just me and the mascot head back there.
Well, it's about to get real cold, Brett. Get ready.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, but anyway, so yeah, we, for now, until, you know, hopefully we're out of pandemic land, we have the guys down in Dallas. They're all living in the same apartment building. They're, you know, going to get food each day. We have a videographer. We got Joe Fries, actually, just got brought on to the
team. Love Joe Fries.
Yeah, he's a good guy, right? So he's down there. He's a videographer, editor, just going to be getting a ton of great content with those guys. And we're really excited about, like, what that could hold, right, is seeing them outside the game too, bringing not only their badass gameplay to what we're doing, but just showing, you know, who these dudes are. Obviously, we know Attach really well. He's been grinding content since the get. Priesta too. He's very interested in building his own brand. And, you know, the other guys are streaming too. I think it's about that time. That do you think it's like time for players? Like, is streaming a must for them, do you think, as far as like doing content as a player? You were a player once. How did you like view streaming? Did you view it as beneficial? How do you view it from a player standpoint?
I always thought streaming was beneficial. In terms of streaming practice, I don't necessarily agree with it. I'm not going to say that that's the right perspective, but in my opinion, you shouldn't stream your practice. I think that it should just be, there should be a healthy balance, right? You can stream in the morning. There's no reason why you shouldn't be able to, you know, wake up at, you know, 9, 8 a.m., get ready, work out or something, do whatever you got to do in the morning, go live for 3 or 4 hours, get off, and then go scrim, right? There's no reason you shouldn't be able to do that. And then when it comes to the weekend, right, like when your scrims aren't as insane or when you have a day off, you can grind the stream on that day. So I definitely think that there's ways for pros to build their brand. It doesn't always have to be streaming either. I always tell pros, like, YouTube is a huge avenue for success and for growth. And because after your playing career is done, your stream might not, like, it's very difficult to grow a stream on YouTube. When you're a player, you're a pro player. People want to learn from you. They want to see what you're doing. And that's why Octane has been taking off so much on YouTube, because he's one of the only players who does it. You have invaluable tips that literally nobody else on the entire planet can give other than you. And that's why I think where I think a lot of these pros missed the mark is in their YouTube video content. And now that they're on these franchise teams and they have all these tools and utilities, like, I know you guys would support and help them make whatever video that they want to make. They should be taking these teams up on those opportunities. But as a competitor, you get so laser focused in on practice and stuff, you put a lot of that other stuff to the side. And that's just where it comes, like, with being a veteran and being in the scene for a while and knowing that there is something that is going to be after this, that I have to do after this. You have to remove yourself from the moment, you know? And I wish more of them would realize that earlier. I wish I realized it earlier.
Yeah, I think that's a good call out. I think maybe when you're that young and you're so good at something, you're like, this will be a fountain that just never stops. Like, I'm not, why even think more than 6 months down the line when my only focus is trying to win, you know, as much during the year and then the big pot at the end, right? Like, I understand that why that's a main focus, but I agree. Like, these people are these pro players are in such a unique position. They have the skill set that not only can help them grow a Twitch fan base, if even they have like a little bit of personality, because the demand is there to watch that skill, but also YouTube, like you said, I think that's a really good call out. I mean, you look back to before like Nate Shot blew up, what was he doing, right? He was on YouTube vlogging at events while he was being a player. Like no one else was really doing that at the time, and that like it was seen as like, oh, this guy, he's not serious. Well, look who's pretty serious now, you know. Yeah. And I think it's pretty nuts. And I actually do kind of want to go back to your like not streaming practice, because I know that's kind of it's a bit of a controversial opinion. I know you see teams like Huntsman or now Optic, obviously. Wow, that feels so awesome to say. But they're a big fan of like streaming their scrims,
and they make it tough too. We could talk about that too.
Yeah, I'd love to, because I think like what from an outsider like who maybe doesn't know, why wouldn't you want to stream your scrims? What are like the pros and cons to doing it? Let's start with the cons.
Well, the cons are you give up your strategies, right? Like you're giving up the way that you play. I remember the other day, actually, this was like 2 days ago, I was watching a Beezy play, and he was using like a different attachment on his MP5 that other people don't use. And I was watching him, and I was like, okay, I'm going to put this on my MP5. I'm going to do this. I'm going to try to, you know, be like a Beezy or whatever. And I remember thinking, I was like, if I was a BZ, I would not be streaming this right now. You know, I just remember thinking about that. Then I was like, but he wants to build his brand and he has a huge opportunity because he's nasty and people are going to subscribe. And, you know, there's more money to be made and he has a life out in the future after he competes. But like, man, people are going to be learning from him, and people that are better than I am are going to be able to pick up on what he's doing and stuff like that, and maybe gain a little bit of an edge over their competitors as well. So it's just tough, man. It's a tough call. I don't think if I was the coach of a team, I probably would say let's not stream our scrims, just because I wouldn't want to give away anything, especially if it was close to a tournament. In the beginning of the game, obviously it's not as, you know, important to hide your strategy and stuff like that, because everybody's learning. Everybody's going to eventually figure out the base strategy of the game. But yeah, I just remember thinking about that and I'm like, okay, yeah, nobody's going to ever have the answer to this. It's literally personal preference.
Brett, we can't hear you yet. That's okay. Not yet. Your mic was just working though. Is it good? Dang. Not good.
Well, while he's trying to figure it out, let's bring up the one thing we were about to talk about. So
it's
weird though, because if like Optic is going to stream every scrim, which is absolutely okay, that is their right to do it. It's like they're just building this huge, you know, brand, and all their, you know, all their players are just going to gain all these CDL fans because they're streaming, you know, every single scrim that they're playing. So it's like if they're going to stream, we almost might need to, or otherwise they're going to garner the entire attention of the CDL, because what the fans are exposed to is who they're going to support. You know what I mean? And you can upload videos, et cetera, to, you know, fulfill your fan base and, you know, get them excited. But streaming is this constant thing that is so intimate to the player that you can't, you know, emulate in a VOD YouTube video on a daily basis. So it's almost like you can't really compete with them unless you stream your scrims. And that's something that I know some organizations see, and they're battling as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I honestly think it should be up to the players and the coaches and the team and what they feel most comfortable with, right? If Optic is comfortable streaming all of their scrims, you know, because they're trying to keep that train going, I definitely get it. I'm never going to fault a team for wanting to build their own brand, or players for wanting to build their own personal brands. But when you look at the environment that can kind of happen out of that, it's just something that you have to like learn to take, right? It's not only are you giving away certain strategies or tendencies or changes you're making live before, you know, certain events or things that are happening, but you're also opening yourselves up to the toxicity that is the YouTube chat, right? Like if you get shit on in a scrim, the chat's going wild, right? And you remember probably even from back in the Optic days when they did scrim all the time, and Nade Shot was the consistent scapegoat. And I just think that, like, I'm not going to
say that,
but I think it had to have weighed on him. Like, that is just...
And it also gives other people confidence, right? So, like, say a team is dominating, right? For example, when the Mutineers were dominating that month or whatever, that they were frying, right? And everybody's like, Awakening, dude, is this guy... What's he doing? He's frying everybody. What's going on? And they were all playing well, Skies, everyone. They weren't streaming their scrims, right? And it's almost like if they were to stream their scrims and get like pooped on or something, get destroyed, it almost like humanizes them. You know what I mean? Like they're no longer this robotic machine of like, what the heck? Like, how are they just frying everybody? And then you see that, and then you subconsciously gain a little bit more confidence. Like I had just watched them play. I saw them have an argument that my team had last week. And then maybe that, you know, helps you beat them a little bit, you know, or their practice goes down a bit from their streaming. So for me, that's always been a thing, right? Like whenever I stream scrims, I feel like other people would watch me and or watch my team and we get in an argument and it would like humanize us. So even if we were on like a, that might not be the right word for it. So what's popping in my head. So even if we were on a hot streak, the next time we played a match, you know, after we had just got crapped on in a scrim, even though it meant nothing, that might have given them confidence to come into the match and beat us. So yeah, that's my personal preference. I'm never streaming scrims for that reason.
Not yet, Brett. We're still a no-go. I think though it is important for the players to try to build their streams up. And I'm the director of content, right? Like, I want my players streaming 24/7 so we can get great clips out, you know, splice together cool gameplays that they're getting and all that. But I also understand there's a competitive edge, there's a community aspect to it, and you can't. I don't know. It just doesn't seem sustainable unless, like you said, all teams kind of do it. And I do think that's a really interesting point, because if only two of the 12 CDL teams are streaming their scrims,
who are you going to watch?
They're going to monopolize that.
Monopolize it.
It makes it harder for, like, you know, if Major Maniac wants to show his POV, but everyone only knows of like Scump or Formal, who's always streaming scrims.
It makes it grow too.
So it's like, it's almost like a lose-lose. Like if you go live, you're like, well, I'm not going to get to that level anyway. And then it's going to be toxic and they're going to know our strats. But if they were to commit, if they were to say, no, we're live every day at one for our scrims, over time, that builds up. You start to catch up. You start to tier upwards. And I think that's a really good distinction, because when I look at the CDL now, and I'd love your take on this because you've been in the community for so dang long as well. Like, think of where Optic and FaZe were like in Black Ops 2 in 2013. Think of how much smaller the scale was within the next like 5 to 10 years. What do you see like especially try to relate it to like our team, a brand new team? We've been here for just over a year and we've already like gotten started, but I'm trying to like just fast forward in my mind 5 years, like, man, if we commit to XYZ, I wonder like what could happen. So what do you think is like the future for CDL teams and how they become, you know, bigger, kind of like the Dreadnought teams that you see in the CDL? Do you have any insight there?
Yeah, I mean, I expect this to expand at a rapid rate, right? Like right now, I mean, Activision, Call of Duty, CDL, they have a lot of cards into this thing. And the success that we had last year and all the things that were thrown at us, like that's a huge W, right? W in the chat. Like, just thinking about the situation that was thrown at us, the things that we had to figure out in like a month's time in terms of broadcast on the team aspect of things, and the teams that we're bringing in now, like bringing in 100 Thieves, it went back to 4v4, we're now on PC. Like these are all things that happened in 1 year, right? Like all these changes happened in 1 year from season to season. And that is just insane to think about. And in 5 years where we can be, like I expect to see, you know, Rocker merch in Target. Like I expect to see like clothes in stores, like people almost like what Overwatch was trying to do in the beginning, didn't really nail it. Like we can learn from that and we can grow and get even bigger, right? Like I've seen the characters on, you know, or teams on cereal boxes and things like that. Like that's what I want to see in the future. For there to be, you know, household names, like for my friends who aren't super into the COD League, that aren't really big into gaming, to know the names of some of these players. Like right now, all my friends, they know who Scump is, right? They know who Nadeshot is. We can have 10 to 15 to 20 Scumps and Nade Shots, right? Like Call of Duty is one of the biggest games in the entire planet. If you bring in Call of Duty Mobile and you add it to, you know, everything, it's like a top two game in the entire world. Like the amount of players and exposure that is out there to be for the CDL to expand to is, there's just such a big audience. I think we can grow exponentially.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, Call of Duty itself is a juggernaut, right? I mean, you look at how many people play this, and then you look at last year what they did with Warzone. They made it free to play, so there's just so many.
And like mobile, we're going to talk about mobile. Imagine if they brought that in.
Mobile's going off, right? So, yeah, I guess let's talk about your perspective on that, because obviously you have multiplayer. You have the kind of the competitive version of multiplayer, which is what you see on CDL Sundays, right? what about, like, there's obviously zombies. There's a whole subset of people that are into that. You've got Warzone. That's kind of a little bit of crossover, but you see it taking off on Twitch and content creators who love BRs. How do you see, like, mobile working its way in there? I think the game itself is sick because it's, like, the best map and the best guns from all the CODs. But how do you see, like, do you see people creating content from that? Is it a competitive team? Like, how do you see it going?
Oh yeah, I think there's a full on. I think there's a full on league to be made for Call of Duty Mobile. I mean, what was it? It was a couple, maybe a month or two ago. Did you guys see the PUBG tournament? Like a million viewers or something like that.
Yeah, on Twitch.
Like, yeah, like Call of Duty Mobile. How many players? It was like 150 million downloads in the first couple of months or something like that. An insane number. I think Call of Duty Mobile, there should be a full on league, and there should be tournaments, like big tournaments, happening. I'm very excited for the future of that. And obviously the apex of Call of Duty competitive is going to always be like the pros on PC playing in the Call of Duty League format, but there's no reason there can't be COD Mobile competitive, Call of Duty, you know, main competitive, whatever you want to call it. And they could all work in one giant ecosystem where people just support Call of Duty in general. And that's the future that I see. I see Call of Duty Mobile going big, and whether it's, you know, bigger than the CDR or not, like if they're all Call of Duty, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's really, I mean, you've seen Call of Duty kind of diversify what they're doing over time, right? They realize, like, okay, yeah, the number one thing anymore isn't trying to sell the map pack after we sell the game, right? It always evolves. It goes into the microtransactions, then it goes into, well, let's make it free to play, but with cool microtransactions. Just how the community, like, adapts to those things and takes interest in the different kind of niches that end up coming out of it, I think is really cool, which actually segues me into my next kind of topic, is like the sniping and gun balance discussion. I've seen, especially on Twitter, like Call of Duty pros communicating back and forth, content creators, you know, going back and forth about, is the sniper rifle OP? Should it be like, should they take the auto aim off it in private match? Like, what are your thoughts on the Cold War, like, sniping, I guess, predicament that we found ourselves in? Is it too good? Is it okay? And what do you think of the gun balance overall in the game?
All right. So the FR is a little bit too good at the moment. Its effective damage range needs to be reduced. It shouldn't be completely superior to the longer range assault rifles. The balance on the tactical rifles is completely off, so they're unusable in competitive play because they're one burst kill, and it reduces the TTK to a point where, like, you're just one bursting everybody from range. Like,
you mean unusable as in, like, they're too dang good, right?
Yeah, they're too good. Yes, unusable as in they're too good. Thank you for clarifying that. Like, they're just like, you'll peek them and you'll get one bursted, so you can't even use those. So that just takes that out of meta. So obviously those are going to be tweaked a little bit, especially when the pub players figure out about it. And moving on to sniping. I think that the auto aim with the sniper is very strong in this game.
Really?
I think you reduce that a decent amount. And then in the current meta, we can fix a lot of issues with the sniper, because right now there's so many trophies that you can't even effectively smoke out the sniper. And combo that, I know this is a lot, combo that with how powerful the 1911 pistol is, it makes the sniper a little bit too overpowered, because the pistol up close is better than a submachine gun, right? So without, you know, buffing the MP5 or any other sub to the point where it's the only gun that's going to be used, you got to leave those alone, and you got to just nerf the sniper. And that is going to annoy a lot of, you know, public match campers, but it's going to be necessary as the game's life cycle goes on, because the sniper in Search and Destroy is so powerful. I mean, it's so easy to hit shots. The maps are so small. The angles are they're so simple, right? Like, when you're aiming down a lane with a sniper on a small map, like, you know, Garrison or Crossroads, and the movement isn't elusive, you're just going to pick them. They're going to die. So
you hold the whole line of sight. That whole section of the map is just auto. It's like, if you think about it in CSGO terms, it's like having an op that's just doesn't miss if you have a good player. And I think, like, I mean, listen, I don't know where they start to blur the lines between how they handle the game on the backside. But if they take the auto aim and adjust it for pubs, this probably may be good, depending on the types of statistics that they're getting on the back end. If it is overpowered, because we've already seen Treyarch, like, respond to these types of things. Like, the MP5 was, it was nuts, bro. Like, that thing was mapping me from across the map, and not even headshots. Like, it was just nuts. And they've already nerfed that thing, and they didn't even nerf it into Oblivion. It's still pretty good, but it's not very good. Yeah, it's still really good, but it's not good at long range because you shouldn't be able to do that. And I think there's some similarity there too with sniping. Now, I haven't sniped a ton in the game, and obviously, you know, former Optic member, love sniping, bro. I want OP sniping until the day I die in pubs, dude. I want to go in there and barely have to try, just snipe everybody. But there's always like a limit to that with me, right? And I'm at my limit. Like, it's a little bit too easy in this game. I mean, Brett's probably could do 360s and hit him. He could probably do it. So I wonder,
like, Brett,
can you hear me? Can you hear him?
All right.
Yeah, welcome back. Brett, have you sniped at all or no in Cold War?
No, I've mostly just MP5 for me so far.
Nice. I literally used only the MP5 and got it gold, and now I'm on to the next thing. But yeah, I think sniping's too easy. I wonder if they can, like, how would they feel about taking the auto aim off of it in?
Could they even just do just the sniper though? Like, is that even like a thing? I mean, they did it in Black Ops 3. I just wonder how difficult that is, you know, when a game is already in its life cycle. And you don't want to just like reduce damage because then you're just getting hit markers all day and it's unusable. I think the best thing would be to like nerf the crap out of the pistol and then, you know, maybe increase idle sway on the sniper, no matter what attachment you have on, just increase the idle sway. So at least like you can't just hard scope a lane, you know, and reduce the amount of time you can hold your breath. Like, those are a couple things that, you know, might not completely fix it, but it would help a lot and at least make it so we don't have to gentlemen's agree against snipers, right? But those are just some suggestions, and I'm sure they're thinking about tweaking those things. I talked to Matt Skrantz, the lead designer for Treyarch,
last night.
Yeah, shout out Matt, about some things in terms of control. So they're paying attention to the competitive side of things already. Good sign.
Yeah, I think, and I've told, you know, Brett this and anyone on Rocker staff who maybe hasn't seen kind of how it goes down with competitive Call of Duty each year, but we are very lucky to have Treyarch as the developer this year.
Yes, we are.
No shade to Infinity Ward and Sledge, but Treyarch is just so attentive to the competitive side of the scene, and obviously the public match side of the scene too. You see how they adjust each year with their games. They always, to me, have the most polished games at release. And if you look at the fact that they came in late on this wasn't even supposed to be their year, and then a pandemic happened. Shout out Treyarch, because that is much, much harder than most people are probably even considering, which I think is pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be really interesting. We should try to get somebody on this podcast at some point from Treyarch. That'd be awesome. But I mean, I'd love to. I could nerd out all day on hearing, like, how did they pull this off in a pandemic?
Yeah. And,
you know, even some of the things you see people saying on social media, you know, there's not as many maps as there might usually be at a release or this or that. Like, there's a game.
Yeah,
right. And then you look at, like, too. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't remember the original release date, but Halo Infinite was I think supposed to be out right around now, and that's, I don't even know if they've set a new release date on that. Like, we've got a game, and from everything I'm hearing and playing, it's pretty good. So huge shout out to the group that pulled this off in the middle of the zombie apocalypse.
It's no easy feat, too. And I know it's more than just Treyarch, too. There's so many other developers, like Raven's really notable, Beenox. There's others, too, that I'm forgetting. But that truly is an impressive effort. Also, I mean, we guessed CDL, you know, for last season, too, and dealing with the pandemic. I think these things aren't easy to navigate. I'm just glad, like Brett said, we're still even able to play. Right, like most traditional sports had to shut down for at least you know, a little bit, and then you see, you know, still unable to have game attendance in most places, so it's a tough time to be a sports fan. So thankful for esports really in times like this. Nameless, what are you kind of thinking about, like, CDL 2021? Obviously, like I said, coming off like a, you know, there were some ups and downs throughout the seasons, of course, but I think overall, like, CDL did a pretty good job during the pandemic, and the teams too really came together. What are you, like, seeing for the forecast of CDL 2021? What are, like, the things that, in your opinion, to watch out for this year?
I think the content's going to be on a whole nother level. I think now that all you guys got it down after having a year of the pandemic, like, I'm sure all you guys had plans going into the year, what you were going to do, in the facility, et cetera. And then you're getting all this constant news thrown at you, right? Like, what can we do? What can we not do? What's okay to do? What are the players okay with doing? Do they want to go home? There's a lot of things that I was hearing from teams that, you know, was tough to deal with. And now that y'all got it down, I think the content's going to be wild this year, especially. the competitiveness of the league is going to be at an all-time high. I think we're going to have way more eyes on the league this year. Obviously, bringing in some of those brands is going to help a lot. And the level of play being at a higher level with 4v4, those two things are paramount for a successful league, and we have them. I think it's just going to be a huge year. I think the fans are going to finally have, you know, not many things to complain about, because they did have some things last year, and we heard them all year long. And I'm just excited, right? So yeah. I think next year's going to be great.
I give props to you and like the, you know, the production team as well. Like,
that was crazy. It is
so hard to do remote production. I only have just learned this. it is so difficult to do all remote production, and the fact that it wasn't always smooth, but you pulled through, right? Like, you pulled through those difficult days where you're like, can you hear me? Can you see me? Is it all right?
Oh, the hot mics, all that stuff. We went through it. I mean, we started this year, you know, on land, and you know, we had our troubles then, but then we figured it out. And right when we figured it out, this happened, and we had to use a program that we had not used, and it was really difficult to get done. But I think at the end of the year, like, the production team nailed it, right? Like, I, at the end of the year, I was just showing up, and you know, they were like, all right, you ready to go? Sure. And let's go. But it was a long process of getting things figured out, trying out different cameras, equipment, everything. It was tough. I never thought, you know, doing an analyst work would be like super hard, because it's COD, but it ended up being hard. But we got it all done, and it was a good time.
Is there something that jumps out at you of let's say stories that you can share, of just like a time when either like you had to fill an unexpected gap, or just like, you know, you couldn't hear somebody else on the desk and just had to wing it? Like, what's,
I'll give you two.
Yeah.
I'll give you two. I'll give you a lighthearted one from this year. So it was London, the London event, and they had the sound team there. So they had contractors that came to do the audio tech. And I didn't have a talkback button. So on every, you know, desk on any show, there's a talkback button so you can talk to the producer. And I guess we just didn't get it shipped in time because we're across the pond or something like that. And I didn't have it. So I was just supposed to, you know, the production would have to be A1 flawless, no problem at all for me to not ever have to talk back, right? First segment, I'm like, all right, let's do this. No talk back. It's going to be perfect. They must have it down. I literally can't hear anyone on the desk, And I'm like, okay, I can deal with these moments. So I just take my earpiece out and I'm trying to hear, and I can't hear. So as the graphics are coming up and, you know, they're gesturing, whatever, and they're looking at me, I just start talking, you know, I'm just like saying it. And I don't even know if any of it made sense, but best believe the next segment, they had talkback buttons. So that one was hilarious. Like, we could not hear each other.
That's pretty good. Honestly, yeah. I watched every single CDL broadcast, especially London. I didn't notice it. Like, did other people notice it? I didn't notice it.
I want to go back and try to find that now. But
find opening segment. Find opening segment of London. Yeah, I took my headset off, and I couldn't hear anyone. But apparently, it like worked out well. And like those types of things happen at events. That's like the one thing production tells any talent right away is like, there are going to be fires, but we're going to put them out. Like, that's what it is. It's constantly just putting out fires during a live production. And our team does an incredible job at putting out fires. Let me tell you, like, there's so many things that would break and they would just fix it right away. And I'm just so happy to be working with the CDL, because I've worked with a lot of productions. I've been doing this for 3 years now. I've done a ton of shows, and there are some shows where it's like, what is going on here? Like, this is really tough. Something happens, like, deal with it. And it's like, what? But with our team, they'll cater to us completely and like figure it out. But yeah, I've had some nightmares, some hot mic nightmares, and some filling time nightmares where I'm just like, I have to use the bathroom. What's going on?
I gotta go get the white
wine. Yeah.
A lot of times you know, in general with big events, it just feels like whack-a-mole, right? It's like you solve one problem and then like the next one.
Yeah.
The next one pops up. You know, we had a funny, in retrospect, a funny moment on the last day of launch weekend where, you know, as you well know, like the first 2 days of launch weekend ran very far behind. And, you know, as the host, we were worried about that. And, you know, our first match started, you know, 2 hours late. And so some people had left, and, you know, we were really worried about that going into day three. And, you know, suddenly we're looking at the clock like, wait, we're like way ahead of schedule. And then suddenly we had the opposite problem. So we were like talking with comp ops and the CDL crew about like, well, no, we don't, you know, we're worried about, we advertised, I think it was a 6 p.m. local start time or whatever it was. And now we're on track for like 5 p.m. So we're trying to figure out, okay, if we start as the host, if we start an hour early, are there people that you know, wouldn't show up? We're like checking how many people have scanned in for their tickets and all that stuff. So, you know, like we had the total opposite issue on day three, but at the end of the day, you know, you roll with the punches and most of the time it works out pretty well.
Yeah. Isn't it an interesting thing with, you know, video games and esports, trying to schedule games at a certain time? Cause like you advertise, okay, the marquee match is going to be at 5 p.m. and then everybody gets 3-0'd. Like, it's like, what do we do at that point? It's almost like, in terms of, I mean, it's a format thing, but in terms of like, you know, a weekend, like launch weekend, it's really tough to like market a match for a certain time. I don't even know what, I mean, you just have to have content to show, I guess, for like a couple hours if it goes so quick. But yeah, that's a tough thing to do. That's crazy that they ended up figuring that out.
Yeah. Well, and you bring up a really interesting point that, you know, that we talk a lot about both internally, and with CDL. And I think it's something that, you know, ultimately will be a key thing that gets figured out, you know, over time, right? Over a couple of years and figuring out the right recipe. But, you know, like we obviously as a city-based franchise, like we want to maximize the number of people in Minnesota and the surrounding states that are watching our matches.
Yes.
So like we want to be as close to the advertised time as possible. And like starting a little bit late isn't ideal, but sometimes that happens.
Early
early can be a big challenge as well, where, you know, if you're a Rocker fan and you're not, you know, you're not necessarily watching an entire day of competition and you know, you're just keeping an eye on Rocker socials and, you know, okay, I think Rocker is going to play at 3 and suddenly, you know, I tune in at 3 and, you know, you're on map 4 already. You know, that's tough. I think some of the most like just running around crazy moments that we had, you know, especially at the Atlanta and the LA event, we're just like I'm trying to figure out like what time we're gonna play so that I can like drop it in the Slack to the content team to put it out on social. So it's just stuff like that you know, ultimately, you know, there's not a right answer or a wrong answer. You just, you know, try to figure out what the best situation is. But yeah, we want to tell people when we play, right? That's the goal.
Like in a couple years time, when, you know, I know in Minnesota, they're already having like, you know, bars had the games on and stuff like that. You know, if I'm coming out, if I'm, you know, 9 to 5, match supposed to be at 6 and I'm coming home, you know, I want to go to the pub and get some wings and a brew for the Rocker game. You know, if we're a couple maps in, or if, you know, the game doesn't end up starting till 7:30 and I got to be up early again the next day, like that's tough, right? So I definitely understand like the timing thing and to maximize the amount of people in there, for sure, because otherwise then it's like, you got to watch it on VOD and it's nowhere near as exciting. That's something that we need to figure out for sure. Yeah. I just don't know how you do it
internally. I can't recall. Well, I don't know if this is public, but it seems like they have a solution to some of that. They're going to maybe spread things out a little bit more. So I think that's going to alleviate some of that.
Well, and we saw that with the schedule during the playoffs, right?
Yeah. Where,
way better, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you've got 2-3 matches a day and it's a lot easier to keep that time certainty. And one of the things that we said to CDL at the time is, hey, if we know we have time certainty, like we will put more resources, we will put more effort, we will put more marketing dollars behind advertising when we play. But we need to, you know, we need to be able to know with some level of certainty or close to it that we're going to be on track for that. You know, but it's tough, right? Because if you know, if you delay the start of a match, then you've got dead air and the desk gets stuck filling extra time, or you have people that, or you have viewers that drop off while they're waiting. So you know, in a lot of ways, all these things, it's about learning, right? It's about try it one way and learn what you can from it. You know, and then you know, you try something a little bit different if what you're trying doesn't work quite the way you want it to.
Playoffs and champs was flawless.
Other than the beginning, we were like, I've won a match or two, but
other than the beginning with the hitting people offline type deal, that's just online. Yeah. It got a lot better in terms of like when matches were supposed to start. The 1-hour delay, it was money. I loved it. I hope we continue that in the future.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good format and just really helped you understand like the if and whens. It's like, hey, like we play this day, this time, it's going to be around that time because there's like either no match or only one match ahead of it. And then if we lose, we play this time on this day. And that just makes it so much easier to inform people of when the heck it's going on, because it's not like the NFL where it's like, yeah, 12 noon, Sunday, boom, be there most of the time, which actually kind of leads me into my next question. So Mike from the chat, because we're doing this live, as y'all could maybe notice before,
yeah.
Mike asks, how do you take Call of Duty esports from WWE tier to NFL tier? So how do we go from being this, I mean, and you're the perfect person to ask this too, because sure. Like I said, we've been here the whole time. You've been here since what, COD 2, right?
In the yeah, COD 2, 06.
Yeah, 06. So dang, that is literally so long. But how do you think we go from being like the scrappy kind of like lol console esport to Call of Duty, which is one of the biggest like gaming franchises of all time? How do we go from, you know, the scrappy, the personality yeah. stuff to the more formatted, like, let's take this seriously, CDL is, you know, huge in 20 years or even.
Well, first off, we have a few, edges over, traditional sports in the way that we can produce content and air our league in certain ways and obviously save money while doing so. So I think that there's a lot of opportunity there. The video game industry in and of itself is just massive. We talked about it literally like a couple topics ago. I think Brett, you might've fell out there, but we were talking about COD Mobile and how many people play that, how many people play Call of Duty, how many people play Warzone. That's all Call of Duty. And that's all an audience that Call of Duty can be exposed to, which I think is huge. Another thing about Call of Duty that people sometimes miss is that in terms of all video games, it has, let me try to word this right, it has that cool factor, right? Like for the sure. athletes, the actors, et cetera, they all play this game, right? Like in America, Call of Duty is that game that everybody knows of, whether they play it or not, they still know of it. And, you know, when you see somebody do something incredible, you can't not watch, right? Like I don't watch golf at all. Never watch golf. When I saw the guy, skip it over the water, that was incredible to me, right? And we have a massive opportunity to create those moments in Call of Duty because of how social media is, because of how some of our players know how to channel, clicks on social media. We can build players to a level like Scump, like Nadeshot once was in our scene, and we'll be able to create those special moments to garner a bigger audience. And with it just being, completely intertwined with the internet, with, gaming culture, I just think we have a massive opportunity to continue to grow. And as those moments happen, within the next 10 years, we can absolutely get to, franchise sports league level. I mean, we're seeing, we obviously saw during the pandemic, a lot of these sports leagues, their viewerships was dropping off. And I saw an interesting thread on Twitter. It was Mr. Adam AP talking about it. It made perfect sense. That was like the first time that all these sports had to compete against each other at the same time when they were airing their games at the same time. We do this nonstop. Call of Duty, all these esports, we are challenging. We're going against each other for our majors all the time. So obviously there's some room for things to be figured out there. But we're not far away from being really big. It's going to happen. And I believe because we're doing the right things.
I think that's a good point because when you look at like I don't play basketball, but it's kind of like a universal sport, or even like, let's talk about soccer, because that's really truly the worldwide or football, I'm sorry, worldwide like sport that everybody understands and sees. Like when I see an insane clip on SportsCenter Twitter, because I don't have a TV anymore. Or cable TV. when I see an insane club, I'm able to realize like, yo, that was an insane goal. That yes. was an insane play. And now you have so many dang people playing Call of Duty. You watch gameplay, and if you don't really play, you're kind of like, oh, cool. Yeah, like they're good at that. But like when you play and you're like, wait, I can't map people like Scump or, like Priest. Like I can't, I'm not that good. Like you start to realize the weight of the skill that you're seeing. And I think, I mean, most people, no matter what it is, like there's competitive everything out there. Like people love to watch people do things at the highest level. So I think being that Call of Duty is kind of that almost like universal language in terms of gaming, I see it growing much bigger than it already is.
Yeah. And I mean, you hit it. You hit the nail on the head, right? Like it's the massive player base of the people who play the game of Call of Duty, but for whatever reason, haven't tapped into the esports scene previously. Yeah. And it's unique for us and some of the franchise teams as well. But, we're in a market where prior to launch weekend, there hadn't been You know, there hadn't been a CWL event within 1,000 miles of here, right? So we're able to tap into that fan base in a different way than if you're, you know, if you're one of the teams that's been in a market that had an event every year. But that's, I mean, that really, that truly will be what determines the success of this league and the teams over the course of the next, you know, call it five to 10 years, is that ability to reach that, you know, tap into that play, that player of the game base. But, you know, one thing that, as I think back over the last year, right, and the things that give me enormous confidence that we are headed in the right direction as a league is, you know, just the base product is really strong, right? Like the game, it's like watching, like the competition is intense. The matches are exciting, right? Like I'm every bit as into, and I think most of our staff that, you know, may not have consumed a ton of esports prior to working here, like I'm every bit into watching our matches as I am when I've watched any, you know, any sporting event ever. And like that intensity is what tells me that, like, we just, like, as we get more people exposed to it, like, it's just going to continue to grow and grow. And, you know, you add to it, and, you know, I don't know if you guys talked about this when I dropped off for a minute, but you're nameless interested in your take on this. Like, you add to the, to what we already had, like, there was a lot of momentum heading into season two already.
Yeah.
And now we've got 100 Thieves coming in, and we've got Optic back in Hector's hands, right? Yeah. And to me, it's like everything's aligning for things to go the way they should be heading.
And we got Treyarch.
Season. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. It's a perfect storm. Yeah. It's going to be a good year. I mean, what we did last year, it's just, it'd be impossible for this to not be a good year. I just think that maybe the community should level a little bit of expectation, just a little bit, because obviously we still have to, you know, start the year and get the ball rolling. But I do think it's going to be a massive year. It's just really tough because even if it is a massive year and, you know, Treyarch knocks it out of the water, we have a new game the year after that. So that's the constant evolution of Call of Duty. That is the big challenge in what we have to deal with. So it'll be, and then we're going to have the other challenge where eventually we're going to be going back to LANs. And after we master this, so it's something that I trust that, you know, the higher ups and the organizations like you guys to figure out and take care of. But I believe that we're on the right path. But, you know, with this game, with the brands that we have in now, in the format that we had last year, be absolutely incredible. It would be absolutely incredible.
This is the most excited I've ever been for competitive Call of Duty, probably since Black Ops 2, just with the, I mean, I know I'm way, the game just came out, Ashley, like, let's relax a little, but, like, it is such a, like, everything you guys just kind of stated, like, the orgs involved, the learnings from year one, the, you know, how we're really starting to implement things, like, yeah, like, we didn't do as much content last year as we really wanted to because of the pandemic, but now we've learned to be nimble and adjust, and, you know, we've got some stuff ready to go, so I'm just, I'm really excited for the next year, which brings me perfectly to our final kind of thing that I want to talk with you about, Nameless, and then we'll let you go. I'm sure you want to, you're fiending to play Cold War and turn your stream back on.
Oh, I'm hanging out. I already put in 7 hours today.
Oh, okay. So. Dang. So you're, all right. So we're at the end of your day. I wasn't sure if you're like going to start your stream after, or you already did, but
I made a video, streamed 7 hours. I'm doing podcasts today.
I love that full content mode. I guess I just want to talk to you about like some underrated teams or players in the league. So we'll start with teams first. Who do you think is possibly the most underrated team in the league? And I think even like, I mean, there's still some teams that I don't even know what they're doing.
What's Paris doing? Do you have the intel, Brett?
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know, man. I need to watch other people's content to find out. Like Tactical Rab was in the chat earlier. Maybe he can tell us.
Tactical Rab, what's going on, man? What are they doing?
Tactical Rab is on Paris.
There's still some good players out there though, right? Like you could still get four solid guys.
I need to pull up. Yeah, you definitely can. There's some good players there. I need to pull up a list of all the teams. So you said most underrated.
Yeah, it's kind of just like in terms, because you have like, you know, the juggernaut rosters there. You've got, you know, Optic now with Dashy back. That's going to be pretty nutty. So they're looking pretty good. FaZe looks absolutely terrifying, if I'm honest. That is a scary team.
Yeah, they look very good. Underrated. I think Seattle is extremely underrated.
But who's on Seattle? Seattle
is going to be very good. Mark my words. Gunless, Looney, Octane, and Pristini. The live or die by Pristini. But that team is extremely, extremely underrated. I remember I made a video about it when they made the roster. And I was like, I like this team a lot. And now playing the game, it's sort of the same thing. I think that Gunless is going to be unbelievably talented in this game. I think he's going to be so good. With that FR, it just works perfect for him. Obviously, after some balance and stuff comes in, that might not be the gun. But, you know, as it stands right now, he should be one of the best players in the game when it comes to that weapon. I mean, you think about the Maddox, backup Swore, you think about the K-Bar and IW. He's had a point in every game where he has been the best player. He's had enough time to learn from his mistakes in terms of being a teammate and things like that. And the last time he played with Looney, I mean, he won, what, three championships with him?
Was it World War II?
And he was in that game, he was the best player at a point as well. So he always has his moments. And he has a good supporting cast around him. He has Octane on his team, Looney finally back. Like, they have a chip on their shoulder, all four of those guys. Extremely underrated, in my opinion. I think that they can come out the gates and be a top three, top four team easily, right? That's a team I could see, you know, going up against some of these favorited teams. You know, you look at 100 Thieves, you look at Optic. I think that they can come out the gates, play that team, and just get smoked. Nobody's like, what's going on with Seattle? I'm just going to get told you. So they're going to be nasty.
That's the flying under the radar team. I love that. And I know you kind of just mentioned, like, I guess I was going to ask you next about underrated players, but you kind of mentioned, like, those underrated players are what makes that underrated team. Who do you think's the most, like, underrated pro that's not on a squad right now? Have you been paying close attention to those scrims and what they're playing?
I mean, it's like, who is not confirmed? Like, Temp's not confirmed.
True, that's true.
But, I mean, it's tough. I mean, I think Classic is pretty good. I thought he had some really good events last year. I don't know if necessarily he should have been not on a team. It's just tough with 4v4. But yeah, there's a few people out there. I mean, Slack, obviously. Like, when you look at the Seattle team last year, it's hard to just say, like, the whole team was horrible, right? Like, you got to look under the hood, as if Urban Meyer would say it. You got to look under the hood and see what was going on. And there was a lot of things going wrong with that roster. So I'm not so quick to just say that he can't compete anymore. So I think that Slack might be a big opportunity for some people to get a player that's not super expensive, that has a chip on his shoulder, that also has a ton of experience, right? That isn't going to completely fold under pressure. And I think some of these players that are veterans, that they deserve another chance. I mean, we were playing a game that was not that, you know, you didn't have to be, you know, super COD intelligence next level strategist to play it, right? Like, it was just run around and get kills realistically. And this game is going to be a lot different than that. We have a new game, right? And these guys have been playing for years. So I think players like Slack and Classic can be valuable assets, given the opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I feel like they've always kind of been like that too. They're always the player that's doing the dirty work, they're not getting the flashy kills or KDs, but they're in the right place at the right time. They're intelligent.
Classic won an event. I mean, like,
yeah, no, yeah. It's not even that they've not even won. They just, you know, it's about kind of finding the right puzzle pieces, I think. So I guess one question I have, Mike in the chat again mentioned Karma. Now, we all know Karma retired in you know, last season, kind of middle of the year-ish. He's been frying in some of the, like, big things that's going on. Like, if you're Karma, what are you like? Do you come back? Do you just not, and you just keep frying? And what do you do if you're Karma, you think?
So I went through this thing that Karma is going through, right? When you retire and you feel like you want to play again, you don't exactly know what your future is. Karma does not like the process of scrimming, and like he's not in love with that process anymore. Like, when you're bad and getting good, right? Like, majority of Karma's career, he was just really good and his team was really good, and when he was bad, like, his teammates would have been were just super individually talented, and he would figure out the game and he'd play the support role and it would work out for him. And I don't think, like, he's not just going to get gifted a spot on a very, like, one of the top, you know, three teams right now, because they have their rosters. And I don't think he wants to join a team that, you know, isn't already poised to win a championship and go through the process of teaching them, et cetera, and getting to that level. So I don't think that he will come back. I don't think he has the want to. I mean, this is what I think from the outside looking in. And I think that if he did, he would regret that decision pretty fast, because of how fast he – how much he wanted to retire last year. I think he's going to, you know, continue to create content, continue to be a streamer. We've seen him have some funny moments already throughout this game. I mean, last night he turned his stream on and busted a cheater and trying to get him banned. It was hilarious. And I think that's where his passion is now, right? And maybe going and working with Optic and some of his good friends out there in Texas.
That'd be dope. I would actually love to see that. All right. Well, we can – one more thing. I guess how comfortable are you given, like, power rankings so dang early? Like, do you have a top five in your mind?
Team? Oh, I can't do that yet. Yes. I don't want to do that. Tactical Rabs in the chat. I can't do it yet.
Video. Some of the rosters aren't even done. I thought I'd eke it out. I guess we'll end on this. What would you say to someone who's looking at the challengers? Because we saw like your Awakenings, your Mac Melts, they're coming up through challengers last year. What would you say to somebody who's aspiring to go pro? Is it just the age old, like, yeah, just grind, bro? Or like, what would you do if you're
it's more than that.
18, want to be a CDL pro so dang bad. What are you doing if you're in their shoes?
I have a friend who's in like this group chat where we play like wagers and stuff like that, who's 18. He's extremely individually talented. And I'll say this to you is what I say to him. The most important thing that you can do is watch these pro players play nonstop, you know, have them up in a tab while you're grinding, check out what they're doing and stay in the loop of whatever's going on, right? And play wagers, right? That's huge to get noticed right now. Like anytime you have one of these special opportunities where you can play against pro players, you need to be trying to do that, right? So a lot of players are playing wagers right now in tournaments. This is their opportunity. If you are completely unknown, right? If you're just a nasty player who's completely unknown, get in these wagers and play 2v2s, 3v3s. Play against the pro. Stream yourself playing. Everybody can stream now, right? Like if you're on PC or if you're on PlayStation, like you can stream from the PlayStation now. Like, stream yourself and put those things out there on social media so you can be seen, right? Like that is the most important thing, is to just have yourself be seen. And if you're trying to get better, right? Like everybody's always trying to get better, but if you're not very good and you're trying to get better and you have this grand dream one day, the most important thing to do is to watch the pros, to pay attention to how they're playing and what they're doing, and find a group of guys that is on the same page as you, that all have the same goal as you. Find those group of people and just learn the game together, right? And scrim and stuff like that. Get an 8th lobby going and just scrim and test out things that you may have learned from your favorite pro player stream. But there's definitely levels to it, right? There's different people that are, you know, at different levels of becoming an amateur player. So yeah, those are the things that I always tell people. Do those things.
That's awesome. That's really specific too, because most of the time it's just like, yeah, man, put in the time, bro. But like, listen, I've been playing obsessively since 2008, and I'm not pro, so.
Well, the worst thing to do is, and maybe if somebody who's watching will learn from it, the worst, the thing that these guys do is they get in the loop. I call it the loop, where they're just in their team speak, right? You know, they jump in it at 6 p.m. because they wake up at 2, and then they're just not streaming at all day. They're chilling in there. Half the time, they're not even playing. They're just accepting matches and you know, jumping in, playing a wager, and then going to chill for another hour. Like, no, you got to be proactive. Like, when you're on, like, when you get on, well, first of all, wake up early. Second of all, get on at the same time every day. And when you're on, play the game, right? Like, play a wager, and then go and play pubs after that, right? Or play a wager, then go watch some pro scrims after that. And make sure all the time that you're spending on your PC or on your game is being used properly, right? Because if you're not, somebody else is, and that's the guy that's going to be a pro. That's it. Like that's simply it.
True story. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Really appreciated your time today. Loved watching you in the pro mod the other day. That was pretty. We tried
tough
to
loss. I'm so mad. Like,
it was interesting to watch. I think if I had to do it again, I'd make it like 5v5 or 4v4 because six was pure chaos.
It was fun.
We try to do something different because most of the teams were doing like really super competitive sweat, like which we love. We love that. But also like, let's not watch 3 Fafars or whatever. 3 ARs, and, you know, switch it up a little bit. So if we had fun watching on that. Where can people find you and watch you and plug into what you're doing every day?
Check me out on Twitter at Nameless or on Twitch. Just twitch.tv/Nameless. I'm live every day at 10 a.m. Eastern.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you so much for listening to Building Minnesota Rocker. You can subscribe to this podcast wherever you can subscribe to podcasts at Spotify, iTunes, all that stuff. Otherwise, if you're watching us on YouTube, hey, what's up? We'll be back. We're actually taking next week off for Thanksgiving. So shout out to all the things we're thankful for, including you guys listening. And we'll catch you on the week after. We'll see you then.
Bye, guys.
Bye.